Welcome to Conversations for a Brave New World with Donna, Sonia and Cliff, where we bring you a global, national and local focus on gender, sexuality and feminism.
You're listening to Conversations for a Brave New World, where we dive into topics that some people might shy away from, but that matter deeply to the communities that we live in. I'm Sonia Maria, a paramedic, an academic, and someone who's passionate about research and real-world stories to create more inclusive healthcare, especially out there where services and support often don't reach. Today, we're looking at PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis, and what's still getting in the way of people accessing it, particularly in rural and regional areas. I'm joined by Jessica Michaels, Deputy CEO of ASHAM, who brings deep expertise in health policy and workforce education, and Brian Sengstock, a public health researcher focused on improving PrEP access for young people in the bush. We'll be talking about structural barriers and the power of stigma, and why improving GP education could be key to changing the game. Brian and his team have been awarded over $1.25 million for the NHMRC Ideas Grant Scheme to explore how we can better support young gay, bisexual, queer and other men to access pre-exposure prophylaxis, PrEP, a medication that significantly reduces the risk of HIV infection. We're thrilled to have Brian join us today to talk about his research, the realities faced by young people outside the cities, and what it will take for Australia to reach its goal of virtually eliminating HIV transmission by 2030. Welcome, Brian. How are you?
Good, thanks, Sonia. How are you?
Great. Can you start by telling us a little about what inspired you to take on this project? Why PrEP and why now?
I guess I've always had an interest in LGBTQI health for many years, having started research in this space about 20 years ago, essentially around the experience of younger gay men in regional rural communities and how they experience that stigma of identifying as gay, the negative outcomes of that, things like suicide and so on that we see all too commonly in this space. The interest in PrEP came about through friends of myself and my partner and my experience with them accessing PrEP, the challenges that they've experienced accessing PrEP, not just in regional and rural areas, but also in metropolitan areas where you would think it would be easy to access PrEP in the larger centres. The reality is that's not the case. But when you start thinking about accessing PrEP in regional centres, you get further out into the rural locations, it's near impossible at times to access PrEP. And that then led to the development of a project around, well, how do we improve access to PrEP?
Well, you and I have spoken before about PrEP and, interestingly, about HIV and how it's being spread in communities, rural versus the city. What does HIV prevention look like in regional and rural Australia compared to, say, the city? And, you know, also what about the rates of HIV? I think they look pretty different as well.
The 18 to 25-year age group, about 67% of new HIV cases, which we call HIV new notifications, actually occur in the 18 to 25-year age group with young gay bisexual men and other men who have sex with men. So the other men who have sex with men in that context are young men who don't identify as gay or bisexual, but still engage in sexual activity with other men. That's about two-thirds of our new cases of HIV transmission, more significantly in regional and rural areas. And there's a whole range of reasons why. We know that 18 to 25-year-olds, the literature tells us they don't have the same connection to the gay community is the over 25-year-old gay men. Again, there's a whole range of reasons why they don't have that level of connectivity. And a lot of it comes back to stigma, identity. Some of them could still be living at home. So there's that family stigma, not wanting to be outed as a gay or bisexual man while still living at home because of the challenges there. Access to clinical services in regional and rural areas, much more challenging, much less access to testing. If you can imagine being, and I'll use an example of, say, a 20-year-old male who identifies as gay, is sleeping with other men, has some concerns that they may have contracted an STI, and not necessarily HIV, but may have contracted an STI generally. The GP in the town has been their family doctor since they were born. Their aunt could be the phlebotomist to do the blood tests. The pharmacist is a family friend. Can you imagine the challenges that that young person faces, having to go to the GP and potentially be outed as a gay man, having to go to the auntie to get the blood test, and she looks at the request form and goes, well, why are you being tested for HIV? Why are you being tested for STIs? Then the trauma of going to the pharmacist who's a family friend, and the pharmacist looks and goes, well, why do you need this antibiotic for gonorrhea or chlamydia? Why are you being prescribed PrEP? That's only for gay men. And the reality is that PrEP is not just for gay men. Heterosexual people are also prescribed PrEP. But the perception of even healthcare professionals is PrEP is only for gay men. There's this stigma around PrEP that people who are using PrEP must be promiscuous. They must be sleeping around.
A lot of judgment going on.
People on PrEP actually taking control of their life and taking control of their, I guess, their healthcare needs and being proactive in that space. And that's what we really need people to be, is to be proactive with their healthcare as being opposed to reactive in that space.
Absolutely. And I think young people probably aren't so proactive, are they? They need to be taught how to be proactive, and it's all about sex education, and they need to know the services that are available for them and even understanding exactly what PrEP is. And just for our listeners, could you explain PrEP for them? I'm sure there's a lot of people who this is the first time they've ever heard. What is PrEP?
And that's a good point. Most people don't know what PrEP is, and anecdotally, from talking to some of the young guys in this age group, they don't know what PrEP is. And that's really concerning, because we just assume that they know what PrEP is. So for your listeners, PrEP is an antiretroviral medication, which is, in the case of HIV, 99%+ successful in stopping transmission of HIV when the medication is taken daily. So it is a co-formulated medication. There's two separate components to PrEP, that being tenofovir and emtricitabine. Those two medications are actually used individually in the treatment of people who have contracted HIV or AIDS. But in the co-formulated dose, it's used to prevent as a prophylactic medication. You can also take PrEP on what we call an event-driven basis. So for the young guys who are not having sex on a regular basis and know when they might be going to engage in sexual activity, they can take PrEP on what we call an event-driven basis. So they take two PrEP tablets, 2 to 24 hours prior to sexual activity. Then 24 hours after the initial dose, they take a single tablet. And then 48 hours after the initial dose, they take another single tablet. The efficacy rate of that dosing is somewhat lower. It's down to 86% effective, but even event-driven is far better than nothing at all.
For all the young guys that are out there who haven't heard about PrEP before, how do they access it? Like, what's the normal way that you would go about getting access to PrEP, post-event or pre-event, et cetera?
Post-event, if you've had sex with another man and you're concerned that they may be HIV positive, within the first 48 to 72 hours, please reach out to your GP or present to an emergency department or a sexual health clinic. We can give you antiretroviral therapy, which will help us post-exposure prophylaxis, or PEP. We can help you access PEP through sexual health clinics, GPs, and so on. They will start you on that medication. You have to take that medication, I believe, for 30 days. It is quite effective and can stop you seroconverting to contracting HIV. If you haven't been exposed to HIV and you want to initiate PrEP, it's a simple conversation with your GP or sexual health clinic RN. What we're seeing from the research we've done recently is that the preference with the young guys is actually to access PrEP through a sexual health clinic. Now, unfortunately, there's not a sexual health clinic readily available in every town, every community. For those who live in a community where there might be a sexual health clinic, that's a good option. They're completely anonymous, apart from having to hand your Medicare card over and so on, but it's got that level of anonymity to it, unlike going to the GP surgery. So if you're in that situation where you're unsure whether you may be HIV positive, I would strongly encourage you to reach out to your GP or a sexual health clinic for a simple blood test. The results are usually back within 24 hours. It gives you that absolute peace of mind.
Thanks, Brian. That's really, it's really good. And it's great to know that those services are available. And I'm sure for our listeners, if you're, you know, worried about that kind of thing, then there's support that would help guide you through. So the first step is just reaching out and accessing the services. Now, if you are someone who's living very rurally and maybe some of these services aren't available to you, is there any online services, Brian, or ways that people can potentially get access to PrEP, you know, in other ways besides turning up virtually? Or is it something that you have to get a blood test for first?
Essentially, you need to get a blood test before you can start PrEP. There's a big fear in the medical community that if somebody starts PrEP and they're HIV positive, that the virus will become somewhat resistant to our existing AIDS treatments. And I can fully understand where they're coming from. It is, however, possible to access PrEP through telehealth. So you can contact a telehealth provider. They can give you the request for pathology online. You go and get the pathology done physically. Unfortunately, at the moment, we don't have the rapid testing for HIV approved for PrEP. There are moves afoot to push that through in the not-too-distant future. Hopefully, we will see that come through. We'll be able to do an HIV test at home, test negative, provide the results to a clinician and say, I've tested negative, can I access PrEP? There is moves afoot in that space at the moment, but unfortunately, at the moment, we have to do a physical blood test to rule out HIV infection initially. Once you've done that, though, there are a number of online providers, like online pharmacies, where you can access PrEP. So you do the request, send the prescription to the online provider, and you can usually have the medication within 24 to 48 hours through Express Post. Some people are actually importing it from overseas, and that is another option. You can legally import PrEP from overseas providers. It is the same PrEP that you would access in Australia. For many who are not on a concession, importing it from overseas is actually a cheaper option. The challenge with that, of course, is the longer lead time from when you order it to when it gets here. And then, of course, in rural and regional towns is a massive challenge because many of the pharmacies don't carry PrEP in stock. So you have to go in, you have to hand over the prescription, and then they say, well, we have to order it in, give us 24 to 48 hours before it comes in. Then you have to go back. If you're living some distance out of town, that's a real impulse because then you've got to drive back into town. You've got the risk of being identified. Well, maybe down to the pharmacist every month and somebody might put two and two together. And that, again, that stigma. Mm-hmm. So there's a range of challenges in that space.
Brian, as a part of your research, you're aiming to develop a peer-led mobile health intervention. Can you explain what that might look like in practice?
What we're looking at in practice is linking experienced PrEP users who are within the same age group or slightly older than the 18 to 25-year age group who have experience using PrEP, who can support what we're calling PrEP-naive users about PrEP. They can talk to these young guys in lay terms and go, well, it's not that big a deal. You just have to talk to the GP. You just have to ask the GP about starting PrEP. Side effects are minimal. It's about having that support person that guides you through the health system through their experience. But it's not like talking to a healthcare professional. It's somebody who is a lay person who's got experience in this space. Because we know these younger men are all digital natives. So doing it through a mobile application on the phone, it's got that, I guess, that degree of anonymity. But it's also got that degree of social connection. And it has been said to me from a couple of the young guys in this space that it could potentially turn into something more than just that connection for PrEP. It could turn into a social connection where there's this network of support in this space that makes it much, much easier and gives these younger guys much more confidence in this space. And there might be other challenges they're experiencing around stigma, identity and so on that could fall into this space as well. Having that person who's got experience that they can talk to, which could ultimately see better outcomes health-wise, more broadly, I guess, than just the PrEP space. So the research is significant because Australia has set a target of virtually eliminating HIV transmission by 2030. To do that, we need access to PrEP. We need to know what the barriers to young men are in accessing PrEP, but more importantly, we need to know how you want to access PrEP. How do you want to access sexual health services? Because what we've discovered is up until very recently when we asked this question in another project, nobody had actually asked young men how they want to access sexual health services in Australia. We just assume that you're comfortable going to the GP. You might be comfortable going to a sexual health clinic. But are there other ways that you would like to access sexual health screening and sexual health checks and HIV prophylaxis in this space?
Thanks so much for your time today, Brian, and for sharing your insights into this incredibly important work. It's clear that your research is more than just about the data. It's about creating real change for young people who are too often overlooked. We're now shifting focus to the clinical and policy side of the conversation, and I'm joined by Jessica Michaels, Deputy CEO of ASHAM, the Australasian Society for HIV, Viral Hepatitis and Sexual Health Medicine. Jessica, thanks for being here. Can you start by telling us a little bit about yourself and your role with ASHAM?
Sure, thank you for having me. So I've been with ASHAM for 7 years now, which is amazing. The time has flown, which I think is always great. I started with ASHAM in their international team, running one of ASHAM's projects in Papua New Guinea, and moved into the domestic space after a couple of years. And I'm currently the deputy CEO of ASHAM. I have sort of strategic and operational oversight over our domestic programs and our digital programs, policy, and our comms and marketing team. And in terms of ASHAM, so ASHAM is the peak body for the HIV, viral hepatitis, and sexual health clinical workforce. And our remit is really around building the capacity and the knowledge of healthcare workers to provide comprehensive stigma and discrimination-free care to people with HIV or viral hepatitis or people who are experiencing STIs. And we do that through live facilitated trainings, both online and face-to-face. We also have a huge amount of online learning as well. And our other really sort of critical output is clinical guidelines and policies and resources. So we are the custodians of the majority of bloodborne virus clinical guidelines and STI clinical guidelines in Australia, and also develop a number of supportive clinical decision-making tools as well.
GPs are often the first point of contact for people seeking health advice. What role do they play in improving or sometimes hindering access to PrEP?
Yeah, I think they are absolutely people's first point of call for health advice. I think it'll be interesting to see if Minister Butler's promise around having the telehealth service hopefully gets off the ground, because that might change things a little bit. But people do go to their GPs, and I think that is a wonderful thing. I think getting care in the community is really critical. I think the issues obviously are around GP wait times. It's sometimes incredibly difficult to get into your GP, and also, of course, the cost of it. Very difficult to find a bulk billed GP. And I know that that is changing, and there's lots of incentives from the Albanese government to try to encourage bulk billing. So hope that we do see a shift there. But, you know, people see GPs as this sort of, you know, trusted long-term provider. And maybe that is changing a little bit depending on, you know, your age. You might not see your GP. I mean, I certainly saw the same GP from when I was a very small child until I was probably in my early 20s, you know, and that was the one that I saw. I certainly would not feel ever comfortable talking to that GP around sexual health. but I think people see them as, you know, they're the go-to. So in terms of PrEP prescribing, you know, I think you do hope that your GP, and you're able to have a very sort of candid, transparent relationship with your GP, and you would hope that your GP knows you and knows, you know, about your, you know, sexual practices and who your partners are, and is able to then suggest something like PrEP to you if that's appropriate for you. But I think, again, we come back to this issue of sort of stigma and discrimination. You know, most GPs don't ask you who you're having sex with or what kind of sex you're having it, you know, whether you've known them for a long time or you've known them for a short time. And so they're not likely to initiate a conversation unless they are a GP who is very well versed in this space, and they are, you know, sort of a gay and bisexual friendly GP, and that's how they sort of sell themselves, and that's who they want to be.
Yeah, I understand ASHRM has received a few grants over the last few years, and the work that you're doing is pretty big in this space. What do you see your role is to try and assist the education of GPs?
I think it's really about us raising as much awareness as possible. And I think also being the very realistic, and as I said earlier, that sort of idea of you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. So what I really, really want to get to is a space where, you know, we can sort of just be honest and really kind of frank and say, you might not be a GP who is interested in prescribing PrEP, but know where to refer to, or at least have that conversation. If someone comes down and sits in front of you and says, I want PrEP, if you don't want to do it, instead of saying something horrific to them, because many people do, they can't even tell you how many awful stories we've heard. Instead of saying something awful, say to the person sitting in front of you, it's not actually something that I do here, but my friend John down the corridor or down the street does. Let me help you get an appointment with them to have that conversation. You know, we have to be realistic. Not every single GP in Australia is going to be prescribing PrEP all the time. And we know that from the data as well. And we don't expect people to, but we want to make sure that the community knows where they can get PrEP. We have people who understand what PrEP is. They know that it exists. They know what it is. And if they're not going to prescribe it themselves, then they refer onwards appropriately. So people are thinking about it. They're having the conversation. They're not discriminating. And they know how to refer.
What's ASHRM doing then? So what's their role in that? Like, are you providing resources online for GPs or developing resource packs? What does that space look like?
Yeah, so we're focusing on a few different levels of interventions. So one of our interventions is a really broad scale national communications campaign to healthcare workers, just to make sure that everybody knows that PrEP exists and what it is. So big, big sort of national comms campaign. We're also doing education with GPs. So we have live facilitated education, and we also have some really wonderful online learning modules. We are the custodians of the PrEP guidelines, and we have a really fantastic 2-page PrEP decision-making tool that people can use very, very easy. And then we're also doing targeted interventions with GP clinics. So at the moment, we're doing focus on Western Sydney, because we know that there's low prescribing there, and we know that there are higher rates of HIV transmission.
What gives you hope about where we're heading in terms of PrEP and reducing stigma?
What gives me hope is that the gay and bisexual community, who are sort of the main community who access PrEP in Australia, are wonderfully health literate and are wonderful advocates for their own health. And that has always given me hope, and that's absolutely been the strength of Australia's HIV response, is that. And I think in terms of, you know, stigma and reduction of stigma, I think we have committed governments, we have an enabling policy environment, which have such key cornerstones to be able to tackle this issue. And we have an incredibly dedicated and motivated HIV and sexual health sector. And I know that the sector will just keep pushing across, you know, every single individual or across the entire country. But I know that we can make progress, and I know that the people who are involved and their commitment and their motivation won't waver. And that gives me hope.
That brings us to an end of today's conversation. A huge thanks to Jessica Michaels from ASHRM for her insights, and of course, Brian Sengstock, who joined us earlier to talk about his research on expanding PrEP access for young people in rural areas.
So welcome, Donna and Cliff. Thanks for coming and joining us in our regular debrief session at the end of our show. Tell us about your thoughts about the interview today.
Well, thanks, Sonia. I think it was a fascinating interview. I didn't know a lot about PrEP myself. And one of the things that really stood out to me was Brian saying that young people often don't know that PrEP is available. So we need more education for young gay men so that they know what PrEP is and how to access it.
We do live in a generation that, you know, unlike the previous generation who was quite scarred by the Grim Reaper campaign, we live in a generation that has forgotten you can still get HIV because of the wonders of PrEP.
There is enough research to say that PrEP is more protective than a condom. In fact, a study in Seattle found about 6 or 7 breakthrough cases of HIV over a 10-year period for people who were on PrEP. And usually that comes down to a drop in protection in your bloodstream associated with not frequent or rather infrequent PrEP use. Statistically, you only need 4 doses of PrEP to be safe. So we've come a long way, 4 doses of PrEP in a week to be safe. We've come a long way from where HIV was spreading to now where we can control it and manage it. But we haven't done much of destigmatizing HIV from the gay communities and separating that.
Let alone working with GPs to get them to get over themselves and start prescribing it, really. Like that's what I can see too is a part of the issue. You know, I don't think it's acceptable that a GP wouldn't prescribe it and feels uncomfortable. I think that that's unprofessional, personally.
But there's more to that. I think some GPs just don't know they can prescribe it. So there's a lot of misinformation out there when we think about GPs, because fundamentally, they're general practitioners. What I've found from my own personal experience as well is the Sexual Health Helpline. So it's 1-800-451-624. It's a free service, completely anonymous. But if there's any doubt about whether you know, what do you do, it's best to call them and just have a conversation and they can guide you in a good way. Another really good resource is the ACON GP list. So the AIDS Council of New South Wales, now known as ACON, they maintain their own list of GPs who are HIV trained or LGBT friendly doctors. And that list can be quite a good resource as well, along with for those medical practitioners listening. There's also the Gay Friendly GP online learning module, which is run by the Department of Health. So that adds another level of accreditation and learning for those interested.
Did you want to add anything about the or clarifying some of that info about the testing?
Definitely. So I think we've come, like, one of the exciting, this, I think why this episode is so timely is because we're just about to enter a world where gay men can donate blood, right? And this has never happened in Australia before. As a man who's often looked at the Red Cross blood trucks on campus and gone, I'd love to do it, but I'm not included. Though I was in a monogamous 9-year relationship, like, it's really hard because you're not allowed to have sexual relations with your partner for 3 months prior. But now we can, and part of the reasoning we can is because of PrEP and the reduced incidence of HIV. One of the conditions for being able to donate blood is having PrEP. What's changed in this period as well is about HIV testing. So there are 2 really good ways to test HIV, the 4-generation antigen and antibody test, which is really effective between the 3-week mark or after the 3-week mark. It can detect HIV with almost, I think, a 90 to 95% probability. After 6 weeks, it goes up to about 95 to 99, and after 12 weeks, it's almost 100%. We've also got the RNA test, which can detect HIV up to 10 days after infection. So we've come a long way with that, which has enabled us to be able to donate blood and to contribute back to society in that way. One of the other things as well, though, is the importance of continuous testing, because even though you are on PrEP, it's very, very, very rare, but you can actually still contract certain forms of HIV, so HIV2, for instance. The other thing is all of this is really free or cheap. You know, with scripts, I've heard people getting PrEP for free. I've heard people like getting PrEP for about $30 or less. So it's not really expensive anymore to access it.
Thanks so much, Donna and Cliff. It's always a pleasure having your insights and reflections in the mix. Well, that brings us to an end of today's episode. We hope you've enjoyed the conversation and found something thought-provoking, useful, or simply reassuring in what we've shared. If you're listening and want to explore more, feel free to get in touch, share your thoughts, or suggest a topic for a future episode. Until next time, take care, stay curious, and thanks for being a part of the conversation.
Thank you for listening. This show is brought to you by The Gender Network. To get involved or find out more, simply Google The Gender Network at Charles Sturt.